This person writes, how to properly understand the Buddha's teachings on not being better, equal or worse than others. I'm especially interested in how to deal with the feelings of being superior to those who do not search anything deeper in life, who merely pursue immediate gratification of casual desires. Not really, when I read these questions, a memory occurs to me of something that my teacher Ajahn Chah would say about this. And as it happens, on the occasion of all the three questions that are being answered here, I'm reminded of something that Ajahn Chah said. And here it is specifically the same question of what do you do with the feeling of being equal, better or worse than other people? And so Ajahn Chah relates how he'd been reading the Abhidhamma and the analysis of the what's called the nine types of conceit. You perceive yourself as better when in fact you are better. You perceive yourself as equal when in fact you're better. You perceive yourself as worse when in fact you're better. Or you perceive yourself better when in fact you're equal. You perceive yourself equal when in fact you are equal. You perceive yourself as worse when in fact you are worse. And you perceive yourself as worse when in fact you're better. You perceive yourself as worse when in fact you're equal. You perceive yourself as worse when in fact you are worse. And so Ajahn Chah is thinking, well, you know, these perceptions exist. You know, what do I do about it? He said, when I look at myself, I can sew robes better than the other monks. I can chant better. I can do these duties better than some of the others, or not better, as the case may be. And then he went on to explain how the understanding arose that it's not the perception per se that's the problem or the cause of suffering. It's the attachment or the identification with that perception that causes the trouble. So the expression for conceited view is ditti-mana. The ditti, that's the view, that's the perception. The mana, that's the contraction of the heart awareness, that's the clinging, and that's the source of the suffering. So most simply, don't struggle over the conventional perceptions of yourself being better, equal or worse. That's just so. In some cases you are better, in some cases you're the same, in some cases you're not up to scratch. Those are just conventional perceptions. What matters is, as usual with these things, is the relationship that we have with these perceptions, and that's something that we can inquire into. Be careful in practice to not hold to the idea that Dhamma practice or the Dhamma is something out there, you know, something external. Your conceited views or your conceited perceptions, that's Dhamma practice. Looking into that is Dhamma. And don't hold to the idea that you've got to find a solution out there. This is what we need to be looking at, that very feeling. How do we feel when we perceive ourselves as being better, equal or worse than somebody else? This is what we need to be interested in, how it actually feels. And to be developing the possibility of balanced sensitivity so that we can read where we're at. We can actually read our condition, not just in our heads with a idea about where we're at or where we think we should be at, rather really feeling where we're at in the body, in the heart, in our belly. Don't be afraid to feel afraid, rather simply willing to feel fear. Likewise, don't hate feelings of aversion, or make the effort to not hate feelings of aversion, rather simply feel or make the effort to feel aversion happening. This is aversion. This is the feeling of aversion. As I was saying, we need to put effort into cultivating a balanced sensitivity or cultivating skills on the level of awareness to be able to perform these inquiries, to be able to read our condition, read our belly, read our heart, read our minds in a way whereby we're interpreting the data that we're receiving from experience in a productive manner. That means working on your spiritual toolkit. That's the primary tools that everybody needs. Sila, or integrity. Sati, embodied mindfulness. Intentional composure. Wise reflection and compassion. These five. So as to be able to skillfully inhibit the conditioned reactions that we have when we're impacted by, like, the perception of looking down on somebody, judging them because they are not conducting themselves in a way that you feel is suitable. Using these potentials of integrity that gives a sense of self-respect and a natural sense of self-confidence if you're not compromising integrity, and embodied mindfulness, that's a quality of mindfulness that means you're in touch with what's actually happening, and intentional composure, that ability to contain the conditioned excesses and conditioned reactions, and wise reflection, asking the right question at the right way at the right time, the right question, the right way, in a feeling way, not just a split-off conceptual way, at the right time. And then compassion, that ability to simply feel the suffering of living beings, no judgment. And this level of inquiry is bound to feel challenging and takes an element of daring, which probably by this stage in practice you already appreciate that you do need to be daring to not follow the tendency to judge, judging the conditioned feeling, judging the conditioned perception, or judging yourself, or judging others. The conditioned movement, habit, inclination to take a position for or against, that habit of judging, to inhibit that takes all of the spiritual potentials that we were talking about just a minute ago. Also, it takes a daring attitude, a daring to feel the fear that you're not going to be able to truly meet the experience that you're having, like the feeling of conceited view, the fear that you can't do it, or the fear that you're going to be overwhelmed by it, or the anger, to daring to feel, simply feel the anger without judgment, making the effort to neither indulge nor deny, to be right there with it. And again, I would say that, yes, you're bound to find it challenging and certainly not easy. And if you, in this adventure, in this inquiry, you encounter the fear of overwhelm, then remember the exercise of coming back to the body, taking a deep in-breath, really, really deep in-breath, expanding the belly, expanding the chest, increase the space physically as a metaphor, as a suggestion to increase the potential for the open-hearted awareness. That means there's the space, there's the vastness in which you can potentially, possibly feel what you're feeling. Though feeling it without manipulating it, without interfering with it, simply meeting it. And then allowing our being to learn, to get the message, allowing the heart to get the message, not to think about what I need to do to get rid of conceit, rather to feel the consequences of being identified in an unskillful way with that perception, the pain that it causes, the dukkha. So a deep in-breath with a suggestion of creating space, and then an even longer, gentle out-breath. We all start out in practice from a place of being interested in a temporary kind of happiness, the happiness that comes from gratification of desire. And if we're inspired by teachings from those who have walked the path ahead of us, to question that that's the only sort of happiness, then the practice that we take on means that we're getting interested in a kind of happiness that arises out of seeing into the selfless nature of wanting temporary happiness. If what we're interested in is the happiness that comes from the gratification of casual desires, then, and we need some help in that, then you go on a wellness retreat. If you have faith in the possibility of selfless happiness that doesn't need to be propped up, you cultivate the spiritual potentials that we have. I hope that's helpful, and thank you very much for your question.